From WBOI Studios in Fort Wayne, this is the I Am Immigrant, and I am Ahmed Abdelmajid. I am a Palestinian immigrant who has been donning the title of immigrant for the past 24 years of my life. I am interested in conversations around the immigrant experience, a conversation that we seem to be not having or we seem to be not knowing how to have. For this podcast series, I'm hoping that we have conversations with different immigrants about all that it entails to be an immigrant. Hi, everyone. This is Ahmed Abdelmajid. I'm the host and creator of the I Am Immigrant.
And I'm Katie Anderson, and I help produce The I Am Immigrant. In each episode, Ahmed and I like to talk a little bit about what's coming up this episode. And today, we are featuring the story of Oleg. And he has a really fun story, and I really enjoyed getting to sit in on this interview.
Oleg, he's a young man from the Ukraine who came here with dreams of playing basketball. A dream that sounded so much out of reach for him when he was living in the Ukraine. But then coming here and playing collegiate level basketball and came into an injury and then other stuff. And what stuck to me with Oleg is his perseverance, his ability to reinvent himself with new challenges and find a way to find the positive in a lot of things, whether personal interactions or professional challenges as he was trying to develop his career.
He was also very tall.
He is. I think he said he shrunk about 2 inches since he stopped playing basketball, but still at 6'6" or something, I think he said.
Let's take a listen to Ahmed's interview with Oleg.
Oleg, or Aleg, I should say.
Yes.
Welcome to our show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you being here. We like to start our podcast with a quick question on when I reached out to you to record this. You had the opportunity or the option to say no, but you said yes, and you're here with us. So we're interested in why did you agree to be on our show?
First of all, when you mention Reinhardt,
Melissa.
Melissa, and I know her dad, it's triggered something. I get quite a bit of different invites, and I simply don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's being busy. It's, you know, good, but same bad.
I understand.
And Reinhardt, her dad, I used to sit down with him and talk. He's a very knowledgeable man. He read a lot of books, and I met him at Caliente.
Okay.
And Caliente is run by Gustavo and Yali.
And we're hoping to have Gus on our show as well.
Yes. And he has a fantastic story. I've been friends with Gus and Yali for a long time. And when they had this Caliente, kind of like a hole in the wall, but delicious food, authentic Cuban restaurant on State Street. And I always come there to just get some cordadito. They're just so good. And he was there all the time.
He Melissa's was there. Dad.
Yeah, Melissa's dad.
And
yeah.
for our listeners, Melissa Reinhardt is a friend of both of ours. She's a very good friend of me, of mine. I've met her when I first moved to Fort Wayne about 8 years ago. She's an anthropologist with a lot of work with the Miami natives in our area. I've hosted her in my classroom on multiple occasions, and fantastic person all around. I haven't had the chance of meeting her father, but she's made sure, she said, you have to talk to Aleg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't realize that you met her father because I haven't met him either. But you're not Cuban.
No.
So
not at all. I'm Ukrainian.
You're Ukrainian. Awesome. So that's the question that we typically get asked as immigrants is, where are you from? So can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and your story of migration to the United States?
Sure. That question has been asked plenty when I first got here. And when you said, like, you know, where are you from? I used to say I'm Russian. I used to say, like, I'm from Russia. And the reason for that is just simple fact of people had no idea where Ukraine is.
And when was that you moved to the U.S.?
Gosh, it was 2007, 2008.
So it was way before all the politics of Ukraine. Right
now,
right
I'm
now
like they're... Ukrainian. They're like, it's like and they're like, why are you here? And I'm like, well, I'm here to make America great again. So, only if I have seen like any kind of skepticism in the tone or that question from the gentleman or lady, whoever asked me that question. So. Then I'm usually just saying like, yeah, I'm here to make America great again.
So interesting. You said you would go with Russian because it's easier.
And it was hard to explain because people would be saying, okay, so Ukraine, is it like somewhere? I'm like, you know where Russia is? They're like, yeah, it's like right there, like a neighbor. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. And you know, after a while, I got so many questions. It was like, oh, you're so tall. And then, you know, or how tall are you? And then next question is like, oh, you have an accent. Where are you from? I'm Ukraine. And you know, I'm like, if I get just a little bit, like a penny for every question that I ask, I would be like, oh, retired, done.
But for you, you're fair skinned. You look like any white American walking the streets. So it's when you start speaking and when the accent comes out that people are interested in knowing the where you're from part. Does it get old, tiring, or is it something that you always enjoy having the conversation on where you're from and educating people about Ukraine?
Realistically, it's the best conversation starter because people hear and I'll answer your first question before, but people here in Indiana and in Kansas, where I originally started this journey, American journey, people were interested. They're like, oh my gosh, you're like from different country. Tell me more. We want to know more. Because all we know is, you know, our, you know, John Smith over here and, you know, George over here on the side.
Small
we don't
town.
Know. Yeah, small town. And we want to know more. And they never travel. So they always, everybody's trying to be, I guess, not trying to be, but they just had no other option. They're just like in their own bubble. They like, oh, I traveled to Ohio. You know, I'm like, well, that's not really traveling, but hey, they're always interested. And I would say it's a great conversation starter, but if you do have to, if you have this, your own schedule now, you kind of got into this, I wouldn't say Americanized kind of stream, but you're getting to the point that you're like just trying to make it like short. Because there's times that people stop you like, hey.
I gotta get going.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but yeah, I'm Russian, like, see ya. You know? Yeah. I don't want to, like, you know, be rude or anything, but I just got to run. But if you are somewhere, like, you know, like, you know, on the shows or whatever, on the networking events, it's great to have an accent. People are saying like, oh, dude, don't lose your accent. That's like your, you know, your spark. That's like who you are. But for me, it was otherwise when I first got to have an opportunity to work because I had a hard time.
People
were like, what did you said? I'm like, write me a letter.
Oh, okay.
So I used to say, write me a letter. And it's like, you know, like the leather and letter.
Okay.
And I was like, I literally say like, write me a letter or leather. And they're like, what? I'm like, well, you know, I'm talking about writing. Come on. Like, I know I'm messing up that word, but I mean, common sense. But essentially, I had to practice.
So was it your thick accent at the time, or was it that you didn't speak the language, didn't speak English very well?
I did not speak English very well. And so my story started, I was born and raised in Ukraine, and I grew up poor, as I guess pretty much all of us did, majority of us. And I had an opportunity to start playing basketball because I was just freakishly tall. I've been like, you know, bullied for that because
and
I'm
you
like
are
super,
how tall?
I'm 6'8".
Yeah.
I think I'm 6'7" now. I think the wear and tear, you know, like all the life wear and tear go beat you down to the ground now. But I was, my parents were like, okay, we're going to buy you a shoe size, like a little bit bigger size than you currently
To grow into them.
So you can imagine I'm like this skinny, goofy looking dude walking around with this shoe size that is just ridiculous. Afterwards, I decided, okay, I just have to embrace that I'm tall. I'm, you know, awkward. I'm just not going to be paying attention to none of them, like the bullies. And I started playing sports slowly but steady, getting a little bit stronger. girls from the higher grade classes started liking me more. So then the bullies started to trying to be friends with me. That time. So, and just simply because of that confidence boost. And then when I started playing basketball, I was pretty decent. We won some championships when I was in school of actual Ukraine. So we won championships. So
that's high school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in high school level championships. Yeah.
So it was pretty good experience, pretty good years for me. And then I always wanted to. I knew that I really wanted to get to the United States just due to like I wanted to play college. I wanted to possibly play basketball in NBA. I always, you know, strive for better. Mm-hmm. And after I hit more of a like age of, I would say like teenager years, that you really cannot travel without either parent or somebody mm-hmm. who's older, your
guardian
or so, yeah. No. Unless they sign up paperwork that they allow you to go ahead and travel.
Yeah.
I was already pretty bigger fella, so I'm like, I just need to travel. I need to see the world, maybe, you know, some foreign exchange student programs. So I did. Had opportunity to go travel and live a little bit with the host families in different countries. I was in suburbs of Paris for a little bit, and then I lived like a couple of months, most like a half a year or something, in Milan, Italy. And I survived there on the kind of like broken English.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard. It was scary at first, but it was very exciting. I saw the world. I saw the mentality of other, you know, nations. And my next step was like, oh my gosh, I really would love to play basketball, and I would love to be playing in the United States, because that was the dream for all the kids in, like, you know, Ukraine or Russia or Eastern Europe for sure. They love to be a part of that NCAA, March Madness, and all that stuff. So, mm-hmm. and then I got start being recruited by different colleges. I got these letters, emails, and one college in Kansas was super excited about me. They're like just handwritten, like no emails, like, you know, now it's just like, all right, we have this bunch of lists of recruiting players, we're gonna send them the generic message like, hey, you, we like your how you play, would you play for us? But they written handwriting like note for me and letter and everything I received. I'm like, man, these guys are really want me to play for them. That was super awesome. And then when I actually had a chance to talk to coach, he's like, oh, you're a white guy who can jump. And I had no clue what it meant. Yeah. I'm like, what is he saying?
The coach from Kansas? Or?
Yeah, from okay. Kansas. So he's like, you're a white guy who can jump and can shoot. And you tell him, like, okay, cool. I would love to play, you know. Finally, I made the decision. Now I'm like, okay, I need to do something with my English, because it was just, I was like a dog. I would understand you, but I wouldn't want to say nothing because I would be afraid to mess something up.
So you didn't study, so in Ukraine, in public school systems, you don't get English as a second language
education or anything? It was a class, but it was class of a teacher who is barely speaking any English. So it was like we opened the books and it'd be like, hey, repeat after me, kat, rat, bat, and, you know, okay. Just like simple things like cow. So, you
know, leading the blind type of deal.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, everything was very, very plain, nothing too serious. And the amount of that, it was not as interesting as to, like, let's say, play sports at that time.
Okay.
And for me, I truly believe it's really about the teacher. If you have a teacher that is very interesting, is very excited to show some, you know, some extras, some, like, you know, really cool things. Like, we had an amazing history teacher. She brought in some artifacts from, like, Egypt. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, wow, that's so cool. And everything,
you get hooked in the topic. And
you're excited. It's not like, and we had some teachers like, all right, kids, you have books. Open the books on page this and read it, and we're just going to discuss a little bit, and you're going to go home because I'm tired of you. You know, there's no, like, passion to teach. So, and
so
that,
there wasn't much of that with the English class that you had. Okay.
And essentially, I figured, okay, I need to do something about it. And what I did at that time, it was that transition between the VHS tapes and to DVDs. And to me, it was like, okay, I need to figure something out because I cannot afford tutor. There's no way. It's super expensive there. And what I did, I started thinking, okay, so every, you know, Hollywood picture, every movie that has been, which is the good movies, came out. Yeah, they've been exported to different countries, and they had to be, like, you know, translated to our language or Russian language, for example. And you don't have no other choice with the VHS tapes. You're just watching the, you know, like, American actors open their mouth and then Russian words.
So is it dubbed or is it subtitled?
Dubbed.
Okay.
And then,
so I had subtitles, so that helped me with,
right, you know. And there was some options. I went to the, like, black market to find those kind of, like, you know,
interesting,
to get the access to them. So then when DVD came out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can just get, like, the cheapest DVD player and with some kind of, like, remote control with a couple of buttons, and there is an option to watch an original version.
Yeah.
With subtitles.
Yeah.
That was, like, amazing. Oh my gosh. You know, I got, like, all my favorite movies. I put it in, just, like, start watching them, and had, like, a little, like, notepad just writing down, okay, the word pause, like, wipe, find in a dictionary what that word meant, and just kind of, like, learn some of the, you know, basics. I had more American kind of, like, conversational, and it still had a terrible accent, heavy one. And then, but I knew, oh, it was not like this, you know, the proper English, like the British lot,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It was like straight up, I went to this American kind of English.
You didn't call them trousers and biscuits.
Right. So, and I finally, you know, put myself together, and I'm like, okay, I'm leaving, and got to United States, got to Kansas. Super excited because, I mean, there's so many options. There's so many.
So the university things. Wouldn't give you English as a second language classes there? Or
There was.
But you still needed to get better to be in the...
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
I've been pretty much thrown into the classes just by saying, like, hey, this is a basketball player. He's a foreigner, and his English is not the greatest, so please... You talk to him, like, you know,
teach him how to
talk to him. And I always just say, like, they're talking to me like I'm, you know, something mentally disabled or something. They're like, Oleg,
do you
understand me? And I'm like, Kevin, like, yeah, like, why would you even, like, talk to me that slow? I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
And my host family there, they were just fantastic because there was no room in dorms for me. And coach, I guess, wanted me that bad. He went to some of the friends' family, and he's like, hey, I know you guys had some foreign exchange students in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please accept this kid? I know you have already one. And Edgar, he's from, I think, Latvia. He was a soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
And we got this Ukrainian guy. He's like, you know, he's a white man who can jump. and they're like, sure. We have one other room that needs to be cleaned up because it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully he's fine with no windows and, you know, kind of basement style closet pretty much. But they were just fantastic there. Just growing up in Ukraine and European environment, I always was aware. My awareness of my surrounding area, of people who I talked to, who I dealt with, is I was more suspicious about everybody.
Mm.
Just the simple fact that there's no such thing as, like, you know, here you have a Southern hospitality.
I see.
They're legitly open your hearts to you and say, like, hey, you know, we love you. You know, come into our home. Here's our fridge. You can eat some food. To me, it was, like, so weird because I got used to somebody nice to you, for example, and where I'm,
they want,
you know,
something
grew up
from you.
You're going to get either stabbed or robbed or something's going to happen.
Mm.
So to me, I was like, what? These people, like, super nice. I mean, something's not, I hope they're not, like, killers. And honestly, I was surprised. And they're just fantastic people in Kansas, in a small town of Concordia, Kansas. And they were just this lady. I said to her, I was like, why are you, could you please tell me, like, why are you so nice to me? And I just straight up ask her. I'm like, I know you just told me, like, hey. And the crazy part is I was supposed to pay rent. And they said, like, listen, you're not going to pay rent. The only thing that we want you to do is please keep your room clean. And just, you know, sometimes I would ask you to, like, you know, take the dog out or whatever. Just simple things.
Okay.
I'm like, fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Deal. And that's when I was like, something's not right. Like, why are you guys so nice to me? And she said, well, I always think it this way. If I would send my daughters, she had two daughters. And then she said, if I would send my daughters to other country, I would want that same treatment for my kids from whoever that family is.
That's awesome.
I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys are amazing. Give me a hug. And yeah, so I got super, I think, lucky to be a part of that family. I had had fantastic basement all to myself with Edgar, and I loved it. It was a blast, and I learned a lot. Even though Kevin, who's the husband of Debbie, and Kevin was always talk to me like I'm slow. Like it's like, Oleg, can you take the trash out? Like, yes, Kevin. And just Debbie was like, wow, Kevin, really? It's already been second year, and you know he's talking normally.
I gotcha.
But yeah, it was fantastic, and that's the first year. And I had a agreement with that coach that I actually, after my freshman year, I would go visit home for at least a month. Mm-hmm. And they actually was generous enough to help me out with tickets and everything.
Wow!
And I went to saw my family, told them all about America, how awesome it is. They like have chocolates with raisins, with salt, with bacon bits, with and just like
European
so many things.
European chocolate, though. I mean, when we talk good. European chocolate yes. versus
yeah. And, yeah, but the options.
Oh, okay.
The chocolate quality is top notch. European chocolate, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah,
I mean, Cadbury.
There's
alone,
some stuff organic, like the cucumbers, the tomatoes, everything. And that's one of the things that I noticed when you cut up a cucumber and tomato on a sandwich, like my parents would like make a breakfast. We do, we call it kanapki. Mm-hmm. Kanapki, we do like open face sandwiches with some tea in the morning or some coffee. You can sense that aroma of cucumber and tomato when you get like
when
you
cut slice them. Into it. Yeah.
Here, unfortunately, until you are actually chewing on it, then you're like, oh, that's cucumber and tomato sandwich. So that's another thing that I shared with my family is like, well, there's so many options, but they're like lower quality. Uh-huh. But the options like crazy, so like insane. Like yeah. You can choose whatever. You can even find pants on like my size, you know, and that kind of stuff. And at that time, it was really difficult for
have just to have right that. Over there.
Yeah. But yeah, and I got to Kansas. And then after 2 years of junior college, I got recruited to second biggest city in Indiana.
All right.
Yes.
Fort Wayne, that's what we're having.
IPFW, huh? Yeah. And then IPFW that time. Now it's PFW.
Yeah.
The coach was like, hey, come on down here. The second biggest city in Indiana. You would love it here. And they're like, they're saying like, oh, there's so many of your kind, man. There's so many Europeans here. I'm like, cool. I'm like, awesome. Let me go check it out.
Bosnians,
Burmese, not in languages I speak. I'm like, yeah. Oh, wow. I got tricked. So
but they're European.
Right, so right. And when I got here, yeah, I really liked it that there's because I grew up in Kyiv, and Kyiv is like full of traffic jams. It's this huge city. Mm-hmm. And it's very comparable to like, let's say, Houston or Chicago style.
Oh, okay.
So it's like very heavy traffic. Yeah, and it's like to get from one point to another one is like hours. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, if you go to, let's say, you drive out to work, for example, at 7 a.m., you're good. 7:03 or 05, yeah. You're done. You're standing for hours in traffic jam. Yeah.
So Fort Wayne was a breath of fresh
fantastic.
Air.
Fantastic.
Nice and
yeah,
and it's quiet.
Not too big, not too little. It's like it's town wannabe city, and that is good.
So you came to Purdue Fort Wayne, played basketball, graduated from Fort Wayne.
Yes,
and you're still here.
Yeah.
What kept you in Fort Wayne in particular, but in the United States, why didn't you go back to Ukraine? You know, what kept you interested in staying in the United States?
Yeah. So when I was getting to the point that I would graduate and I would not have no eligibility for scholarship, I was going for organizational leadership and supervision.
Okay.
And at the end, I'm like, okay, I need to cut it down and just get to the point, graduate. Mm-hmm. And I'm a true believer of it's not about if you're not going for a specialized degree, if you're kind of like lost and don't know what's going on, but you have that outgoing personality, you have some skills of like selling. It's not about who you know. It's not about what you know. It's about who you know and how you can sell yourself. So I graduated with a degree of general studies.
Okay.
And minor in OLS. And I wanted to have that OPT program. And the reason why I decided to go with the OPT program, it's
being...
optional. It's optional practical training. So it's like allows the international students to graduate and have an OPT card, a year of working outside of obviously campus, because as an international student, you have only the right to work on campus.
Yeah.
Officially.
So. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that. That's why, so when you're a student on a student visa, you're only allowed to work in campus jobs, but then there is that OPT or optional practical training issued for a year from graduation to kind of give you some to put on the resume, some practical experience to put on the resume. Okay. So you did that for a year?
Yeah. So I did that for a year. And the reason why I went for that OPT, I was thinking about going and playing basketball, continue playing basketball, but I got a chronic injury for shoulder. So I would, this is what I would do. We would play games and I would get in the pain. And since I'm a white guy who can jump, I would go up with the ball. I was use all my force to go up with the ball. Mm-hmm. And then the defensive player would smack the ball down.
Heck of shack.
So, yeah. So it was like just going opposite direction. So my shoulders would pop out of the socket.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was sharp pain. Then I'm like going to the bench. And then coach is like, hey, suck it up. Team needs you. Let's go.
Okay.
I'm like, all right. Well, I'm a man. I'm going to suck it up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it hurts like crazy. But, hey, I'm going to suck it up. So I did it again and again, didn't heal it fully, and again and again, with that influence of like, oh, stop whining, just like it's like a little boo-boo, go out there and play.
Mm.
I got to the point that it's just every screen that I would set and it would hit like wrong, my shoulder would pop out of the socket.
Ugh.
And it's not only one, it's two.
Oh.
So that was to the point that I was like, okay, I'm going to just maybe take a little break, go like play beach volleyball or something and just see maybe, it will heal itself. Nothing. Like I would play volleyball, I would like hit the ball just by hitting the ball over the net, it would pop out.
Mm.
And I'm just like in this severe pain. At that time, our medical, opportunity to heal that trauma or that injury was nothing. Now, everybody's like, oh, right now, I talk to a lot of different like athletes and sports doctors. I'm dealing with a bunch of physical doctors like that do surgeries and everything, and I would sell cars to them before, and they're like, now we have the opportunity. We just like make a little incision, cut.
It's an easier
done.
Surgery.
I'm like, well, thank you.
So that took away the potential of playing.
That train left.
Professional, that train left.
Yeah, and I just said, okay, there's no option. It's either A, I will try to get a job, get an OPT, a chance, try out in the workforce here and, get some experience and see how it's like here. Or I'm going to go and try to heal and just take a chance and try to maybe play basketball in Europe, which that was a huge risk that I will get not healed fully and nobody's going to offer me a contract.
Mm.
They're going to say, nobody's going to get you on the team if you're injured, no matter how high you jump.
Yeah.
So I made a decision. And at that time, I was actually dating a girl. Mm-hmm. So I said, like, listen, this is what's happening. I probably going to be going to do an OPT. After OPT is done, I'll have to just move back home.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, and our things are going really well. So we actually, afterwards, we were like, hey, she's like, I don't want you to leave. Is there any way? I'm like, well, there is, but I'm like, you know what? And in my mind, I'm like, why don't I just like propose to her, and get married? That is a way out as far as like to stay here.
To stay here.
There's an option. And then we were dating. Everything was great. So there's no point for me to wait, go home, do all this mess with paperwork, because that's what I've heard, like a lot of horror stories with them. Like you go there, then go back. It's just a mess.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just going to propose because we already been like dating when I was in college. So like, what's the point? So I asked her to marry me. And then when we got married, I was actually, I don't know if I'm like a procrastinator on that part, but I was actually almost to the point that it's getting my grace period. after the OPT is done.
Uh-huh.
But when I started OPT, the biggest issue I had was to get a job.
So because it doesn't guarantee you a job, it just gives you the time to be able to find one and stay here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the resume, what you're going to put on resume? Like I sat down with some of my advisors. They're like, well, you can say you play basketball. It's like, you know, team sport and everything. You're a team player. I'm like, that's it. They're like, well, I speak other languages. I mean, that's good. You know, mm-hmm. Russian, Ukrainian, cool. But still, I have a heavy accent too. I mean, it's better, but still, it was not good enough. And that's how I felt when I actually started going in interviews. I'd go on this place. And they would not, like, they cannot tell you that, hey, you know what? I'm sorry, we cannot offer you this job because I think our clients will not understand.
So what kind of jobs were they?
I went to like this marketing firms. I went to, I'm trying to sell.
So you're going to be talking to people. Mm-hmm. And
so entry-level stuff.
And you feel that the accent that you had or still have put you at a disadvantage because people might not fully understand you or might not be interested in speaking to a Russian?
Not only that, but also they're not, well, like whoever interview you, they cannot tell you, like, I'm sorry, but you're not cut into the job because of this.
Uh-huh.
They just say, I'm sorry, but, you know, we went with the other candidate or whatever. But during my times here, I was a big partier. So I would like go out with friends, and most of my friends were not my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
On my basketball team. I have no idea, but I guess I'm just going to say it. I have like a lot of people that are all of them rednecks from Muncie, Indiana or something. They're like just very, their humor, their ways of doing things, their ways of joking was just so off to what I felt that was funny. Okay. I guess like it was just completely not funny to me. It was just like super childish. And I'm not saying that they were like, you know, kids or something, but I'm just saying that I was not about to pretend to somebody else that I'm not. I'm not. It's like, mm-hmm. That's what kind of like coaches were like, well, that's why I got into like bad side of coaches as well.
Because you're not hanging out with the team.
I'm not hanging out with the team. Okay. I'm not building chemistry. I'm not. And I'm like, well, I tried hanging out with them. It's awkward.
Yeah.
We go on the court, we play, we're doing our part. Like I would be the best teammate you can possibly be. I'll help you out if you fall down. But after we go outside of court, I do not see them as being my friends or as being somebody that I can hang out with and joke around and do stuff. And the other half, we have like, you know, obviously we have African-American guys and girls, you know, that have their own style of talking, style of having a good time. So I thank God I had a opportunity to meet some of the previous international players,
mm-hmm.
that was on the IPFW team. And they just put me under their wing. At that time, they knew a lot of like business owners, nightclub owners. So they knew a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So their mentality was to make influential friends. They had like connections and everything. So, and that's when I actually start using those after I was like, I went to here, there.
Context.
I'm like, hey, can I work for you? And they're like, oh, sorry, you're like, you cannot say leather. Can I hire you? You know? And I'm like, oh. But because of that, I got a no from Enterprise Rental Car, whatever.
Okay.
That's one day I went to, and one of them I overheard, they're like, oh, dude, I don't know if he's going to be cutting out for this. Like, he has a heavy accent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm pretty sure, like, we need to make sure the guests are understanding him really clearly. And da, da, da. I'm like, oh, whatever. So I'm like, you know what? I was like, I'm just do a little bit different route. I decided to just go ahead and go to, I think it was Office Depot or something. I went to the library, created a business cards saying motivational, inspirational speaker. Put my name, put my phone number, my email, and I start going to businesses, just go door to door and saying like, hey, I will do a motivational speech to boost your morale at your place of employment by just doing a compare contrast speech of what lifestyle is in Ukraine, for example, in Europe, and what lifestyle is here. And you have nothing to complain about and just, you know, embrace and appreciate what you have and you can do a lot with what you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of speech rules are just a disaster. Oh my gosh. People are like,
you have to
what?
Get those out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like a fail. But then I felt comfortable. I felt great. And the reason also why I did it is just because I was like, I have to find a solution. I have to find a problem and I have to solve it to maybe, you know, do some kind of freelance work or some kind of like on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I started like looking up fears. I'm like, oh, public speaking is a fear. I'm like, maybe I can just do public speaking. It's like number one fear. Like people like fear that more than death. And I'm like, wow.
I have a wife who would say that, yeah, she would fear public speaking right. more than scorpions even.
Right. So, and afterwards I've learned that and I had no idea about it. Afterwards I learned it. I'm like, well, I have advantage. I don't really care. I can totally do it. So I know it's just a couple of tries that I will mess up. I know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But then it will get better. It's like practicing anything you do. First is harder, but mm-hmm. then after repetition, you do it more. You're becoming an expert, essentially. And after a couple of other speeches, I got an opportunity to go speak to them. And I'm like, at the end, I just stuck a thing like, hey, just so you know, I'm actually looking for, you know, a stable income. I'm looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
I have a set of skills that might help you. So if you are interested, it's my number on the card. So I not only can do speeches, but I can actually work for you.
I just find it ironic and extremely funny that one of the main reasons why you couldn't get a job is that people were worried about the way you speak,
mm-hmm.
and you flipped that on its head, then you became a public speaker.
And
I find that.
Yeah, and it's
kudos to you.
One thing that I start after those bad speeches that I did, first ones, I was like, okay, I need to practice. I need to make sure I will not make that mistake again of, say, pronouncing that word. So I started recording myself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. When you see yourself in the recording and your voice, I'm like, oh, my goodness, I'm terrible. I have to, like, change that business card to something else.
Another way is, like mine, have kids that will pick up on your accent and right. will tell you, you're saying it wrong.
it's rough. And then I like re-record myself and I start practicing. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready for another set of speeches. So I went, you know, door to door, business to business and started doing that. And then I got job offers. Like I got say, hey, we are starting this company, this marketing company. Would you be an account executive for that company? I'm like, cool. Awesome. I start getting into this marketing thing. And this is all within like a couple of months. I was like, I need to just like hammer it out and just get a job because my time is ticking.
Mm-hmm.
All throughout half of that year, I knew that, okay, I'm going to propose. Everything's going to be fine. So now I have to like take off that monkey off my shoulder and just concentrate to find my craft and just find what I want to do. I still had no idea what I'm going to be good at or what I'm going to do for to make money. And, you know, I was still kind of that weird stage. And then I started just concentrating on the work. I started going to business. We were doing marketing. We found a problem. Like, okay, when you do give your business card to somebody, majority of the time, if they're not they're someone interested in you trying to sell them something, they'll just throw it away. They're like, oh, thank you so much for your card. It was a nice card. And then just like get in the car, like in the back seat. And how would you make it so that card will stay in the wallet all the time and your face is always blinking
from it?
Yeah, add value to it. So what we did, we go door to door to business. We went to like Marco's Pizza, we went to Putt-Putt, and we're like, hey, we want to bring you more clientele, more people in your business, and we want to do this agreement with you that you allowing us some kind of discount. So whoever comes in with that little logo of our company, that you will provide that discount and you sign an agreement. But we will try to make sure that we'll force some like traffic to your business for Putt-Putt, for Marco's Pizza, whatever it is. What can you give us? They're like, well, I can do like 20% off of carryout for pizza, whatever. I'm like, perfect, awesome. So we signed an agreement. So then we put their logo and everything from them on our website. And then I would go collect all those business offers and I would go to the businesses, to the real estate agents. They're like, hey, how about I'm going to make you a card. I know you guys have your own, like, you know, business cards that you do from your, you know, from your corporate, but how about I'm going to make you a card and I'll make sure your card stays in the wallet of your clients.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, how are you going to do that? I'm like, well, here's the website. Go to our website.
Nice.
We can put your original old school front as you usually do.
Yeah.
But on the back, what we're going to do is we're going to put those offers that you think that your demographic clientele base will want. Like, for example, you're targeting families or whoever comes in. Obviously, it's a pub, maybe pizza night, whatever it is. So then you give your card. You obviously buy cards from us with those offers. You give that card to your clients, to your families, and they hold on to it because they can reuse it all throughout the year.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was really interesting, yeah.
So it seems like from really early on and to this point, you're motivated, you're a hustler in a way, but in the good sense, in business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even from what you were saying earlier, from learning the language so that you get to play the game that you love and go to the United States and get a scholarship and all of that. Where is that motivation coming from and what's keeping you going?
That's a very good question. That's something that I tell myself all the time. And I tell pretty much whoever I'm in business with, I'm actually telling them what my motivation is. I said, I want to make money, obviously. And this is not the best, obviously, motivation, but that's good because everybody's can say like, oh, money doesn't matter.
Those are the people that have money who say that.
Right. But at the same time, money, if you do have money, it will eliminate some of the struggle and problems that you will have without money. I said, like, you know what? It's all up to you what you want to make. And everybody makes a certain amount of money and then they get raised. But at the same time, that hunger grows as well. Mm-hmm. So you maybe, you know.
Is that coming from your early experiences when you said you didn't have the money and seeing that life and wanting to make better?
When I grew up at that time in the Soviet Union times, we were like, obviously, there was like coupons, all this, you know, you have to stand in line for like a bologna, for a bread. It was just
rations.
Yeah, it was just, like it was terrible. Like the whole experience, it was just awful. But at that time, we didn't have no exposure to the social media or to the news or television. Nobody said like, hey, you know, there's America or there's like, you know, some other country. There's just fantastic places to live, to work, and they have all sorts of chocolates. You know, nobody said like we knew that this is our life and this is probably how everybody in the world live. But then essentially we got exposed to television. My parents get a little bit better jobs. They were hustlers. Like they were true hustlers. They were like working some factory jobs like pretty much day and night to pretty much give us a future to myself and my sister, my older sister. I have an older sister, 10 years older. Natalia, and they were just absolutely like barely sleeping like three hours a night. They were just like killing themselves to provide us some bread on the table. And it's just terrible. And then when I see it, I was like, okay, this is the reason why I'm going to be doing whatever I need to do to get to either basketball, either an NBA, whatever it is, to give them the retirement that they want. I do not wish to have my parents to have like any kind of doubts that, oh man, I'm going to retire. And then our retire like money for those retired people it's a joke. They're literally getting $20 a month.
Social security or pension or
anything. Insane. It's just absolutely absurd. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a kid who is somewhat successful that helping out, you're okay. But if you don't have your kids that are somewhere building their business and everything and sending you money, when you're done with your work life and you're retired,
you literally
get like $20 to $30 a month and then your rent and utilities and all that stuff is like $40.
Wow. So
that's my motivation.
That's your motivation.
My motivation is always I want to make sure that I'm making money and I'm providing the lifestyle for my family, for my mom, dad, my sister, my nieces and nephews, because I know I'll make money and I know I'm going to be good, but my motivation is mainly I want to help my family.
You got a little emotional when you were talking about your parents and all the effort that they've put in. I mean, you can tell that they've raised a strong, upstanding young man. Are they still in Ukraine or
yeah.
are they here?
Mm-hmm. They're still in Ukraine.
Do you get to see them often?
This is probably going to be the summer, hopefully. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the summer that I'm going to actually go first time in 11 years.
Wow.
So I haven't seen them.
I mean, aside from home, the place that you grew up in, you know, I asked that question because a lot of people think that, you know, as an immigrant, well, maybe I shouldn't say a lot of people. In my experience, there is that when you look at an immigrant who is successful to top, you look at them and you're thinking, oh, they, you know, they have it good. They came here, they made something of this, and they don't realize the struggle, the emotion that goes into it. I mean, is it in those 11 years, how many times did you think about, I want to go home and see my parents?
Oh gosh.
Every single day?
A lot. And I actually, I told them, I was like, I told my parents, so I got my citizenship in 2016. So I got my, that fancy certificate that everybody waits for and goes through all the rough times. And I got it and I said, okay, I can actually go ahead and start filing paperwork to, for you guys to come here. And I was just blind about the things that, the fact that I'm losing to my sister, apparently. So my dad and mom was like, all right, listen, I'm like, so we would totally do it, but so far your sister's winning. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you winning? She has three kids, you have zero. So I'm like, what?
I would say that's winning.
I'm like, well, you had to like tell me from the start that that's the competition. Well, they're obviously joking, but essentially they just, you know, talk to me like, listen, we don't know the language. We have all of our friends here.
It's hard.
It's absolutely, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's difficult for, to learn the language.
We did that with my parents. I mean, I'm the youngest of five, and I'll be 42 next week. So we're a big older. My parents are in their late 70s. And about 6 years ago, I have a brother and a sister in Michigan, and so we moved them to Michigan so we can focus on them a little more. I have an older brother and an older sister, one in the Czech Republic and one is still in Qatar where we were all born and raised. But, you know, my dad's health, and it's nothing other than he went from working every day and, you know, speaking the language and not having to worry about these things to all of a sudden it's completely foreign. And they've visited many times before, but to live here full time and, you know, you're not working anymore and all that, it just went downhill. And it's tough. It's really tough, especially on them when they're older. So I can fully understand where your parents are coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, can you tell us a little bit about that tug that exists within you between home, where you grew up, where your parents and family, and here? Is that, you look at that, is that a motivation? Is that something that I'm going to work 20, 30 years, make a lot of money and go back? Is that I'm thankful for where I come from, or I don't like it? There's a whole host of emotions that go into that. Where are you on that spectrum?
I am, to be quite honest, I'm in now.
Okay.
I live in now. I obviously think about the future, but for me, I understand that whatever happened with me in the past, that sculpted me.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me, like, if I wasn't bullied for being goofy and tall with big shoe size, maybe I would not snap and get that confidence, that boost, insane boost of confidence that I have to just like rock it out. My height, my, you know, my goofiness, whatever it is, I would stop slouching. Maybe that wouldn't happen if I wouldn't, you know, have that. And I'm thankful for what I had there. Those bullies then essentially show me that there is something that is called, you can persuade, and you can do it by, you know, maybe power, maybe something that you have that they want to have, which in that time there was those girls that was like liking me and they were bullying on me, but they're like, hey, we were your buddies, remember? I'm like, yeah, remember you were like bullying me, but sure, why not? And then that comes, those lessons come, and then it's up to you to forget it, or you take it, embrace it, and just make something out of it, make yourself stronger and more prepared for what's coming next. Mm-hmm. But any decisions that I make today, right now, it's my decisions. I never regret it. Even if it's made to be the bad decision, I would never regret it. Because mm-hmm. I know that I will essentially, even if there's some kind of obstacles, would make out of that decision that I made, I know that was my decision. That's my story. That's my destiny. I totally believe in it. Mm-hmm. And whatever that, to answer your question, that I respect what my parents did. I love everybody in Ukraine. Everybody has their own like positives and negatives everywhere.
Absolutely.
You go.
Yeah.
Here, it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of things that I can actually grow on. Mm-hmm. Like here, if you have a hat on your shoulders, you can be whatever you want to be, except obviously president.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I want to fill that those shoes, even if I had an option. Because yeah, that's
nowadays that's a, that
some,
is
some
even
small
possible.
Shoes to fill. But yeah, jokes aside, so yeah. You can make something out of yourself, and here's just like just so many opportunities that I see mm-hmm. that you don't even have to have a degree to make it happen, and that's been proven here more. And then that's how it, and I haven't traveled for quite a long time, mm-hmm. so I don't know how it is there. I only communicate via Skype with my friends, with my family, and they were telling me like, oh, there's the changes here. This is better, you know, or this is worse. And then I would like talk to my friends that like live in different countries now, move to different, like, you know, Georgia or some other ones, and they're like, oh, this is horrible here. So it's always something about it. It's about power, it's about politics there, but I'm always concentrating on now and only stuff that I can control on my circle, like gotcha. My family, my close friends, which I mean, I wouldn't say like I have tons of friends. I do have quite a bit of acquaintances, and you know, mm-hmm. like in my culture, what I've been raised, a true friend that would solidly would take a bullet yeah. for you, and that's like true friendship. And I do have some good friends back in Ukraine. Here, it's just acquaintance, I would say. Yeah, we call them friends, but are they going to truly
the definition
know, got you
and
back?
The relationship is different than what
absolutely.
You know, we grew up.
Yeah, and the word, that's one of the things when I first remember here, I got yeah. here, I'm like, all right, I need to move to a different apartment. Can you help me out? Yeah, I'll help you out. All of a sudden that day comes like, oh, dude, you know what? I had this thing, you know, sorry, dude. I'm like, but you gave me your word, you know?
Uh-huh.
To me, it was so difficult to get used to that the man, if he gives his word, it's a blood, sweat, tears, you'd make that word happen. That's why you man. That's how I've been raised. But here's a little bit different. This is like wishy-washy stuff.
It's different
so,
than what we...
Yeah.
I grew up with a similar environment too. And it's funny. I'm going back to Qatar for a visit, and I, you know, WhatsApp with one of my high school friends. You know, we kept in touch that way. And I almost put the Americanized question saying, hey, are there Uber or taxis at midnight that would pick us up from the airport? Because it's midnight, you know. And I got, you know, basically he ripped into me a little bit over WhatsApp. And like, dude, it's midnight. You have work the next day. I don't want to bother you. He's like, it's not your problem. Just tell me what time and what flight number.
I'll be there.
I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And it's different than what we have here, where if you do that, my experience, if I do that for a friend who's born and raised here, then they would hold that in a very high regard, that, wow, you're going extremely out of your way to come and get mm-hmm. me. And they would value that, but it's not an expectation, I guess.
Here I had some situations that people felt uncomfortable that I went a little bit extreme on yeah. helping them out. They're like, whoa, dude, it's like
it's
you don't need to
yeah.
do that.
What do you want from me?
Right.
We're back so, full circle.
But overall, I would love to, obviously, if I'll get to the point where actually some of my goals that I just set for myself and work right now, if they work out and I would have some of those streams of passive income, then I would totally would have freedom to travel. I would totally would travel. I mm-hmm. definitely would want to come back and give something back to those communities in Ukraine as well. I would love that.
I understand that.
And But my main priority is I want to make sure that my parents would not have a need and nothing materialistic, like from food, you know.
I respect that.
I want them to have everything.
I respect that.
But yeah.
You mentioned Ukrainian versus Russian. How different are the two languages from each other? Do you, like, by if you speak Ukrainian, then can you understand most of Russian, or are they completely different languages?
They're similar, but if I'm talking, this is the funniest thing. I even have friends here that are Russian and Ukrainians, and we would come together and I would say something in Ukrainian. My Russian friends have no clue what I'm saying. But what I'm saying to, where I have Ukrainians and Russians all in one room and I say something in Russian, everybody understands it. So I guess due to maybe, and I just assume that due to like that Soviet Union times, the Russian language was kind of like, hey, that was the main language. So that's probably the cause of Ukrainians understand Russian versus Russians. Majority of Russians have no clue what you say in Ukraine.
Yeah. I see. When it comes to identifying yourself or speaking to your identity, how do you identify yourself? Are you a Ukrainian? Are you Ukrainian American? Are you American? Or does that question even cross your mind when, you know, when people ask you where you're from and you go through that? But there are obviously multiple parts to your identity. So how do you identify yourself?
When somebody asks me that question, it's like, where are you from? I'm just telling them where I'm from. I'm from Ukraine. But there's rarely that I would actually call myself either or. Like I would, that doesn't cross my mind that much. But if somebody gets more deeper into it, and majority of the time I would sense it is if it's a sarcasm, if it's like, you know, skepticism, or if it's like, you know, what their motives are when they're asking that question. And that's when I'm actually either switching to like, hey, I'm here to make a great by just knowing where they stand.
I see.
By so asking that question.
Trying to like make a slight about Ukraine and being Ukrainian, that Ukrainian identity part comes out more.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's when I say like, you know what? I came from Ukraine and I became American. I got him a citizenship. And when there is some skeptical questions about it, I'm just totally start joking with them and being smart aleck. Smart aleck. So, but overall, it's if I'm sitting down with somebody who is genuinely interested in like some of the things, some of the differences, or maybe how Ukraine is versus, you know, obviously nowadays you hear about Ukraine like
you
everywhere.
See a lot more, yeah.
Now, and now I don't have to explain where Ukraine is, so I can actually say like, hey, I'm in Ukraine. And that's when somebody's asking me and being like, I had plenty of older gentlemen who I just know they're super against immigrants. And they would like sit down at the same table, would share a table, because I do have tons of American, you know, acquaintances or friends, what you call it, but that would invite me to places. And I would sit down and they were like, oh, so you have an accent, boy. Where are you from? I'm like, Ukraine originally, yeah. And he'd be like, just asking these like questions like, oh, so why are you here? Let me tell you that. Let me ask you this, you know. And I'm like, well, you know. And I would ask a couple of questions from him, what exactly you mean or so. I would just clarify it. And then
you can poke a lot of holes.
Yeah,
in,
and then just to find out if, so I will not start rude on the, you know, rude side for with that whole conversation. But a majority of the time when I'm saying like, hey, I'm here to make America great, there everybody start laughing and he just shuts up. That's it.
So we like to end our podcast with, you have people out there that are listening that want to know more about immigrants or immigration, or, you know, want to know how do I ask questions that I'm curious about without being offensive, or I don't want to offend somebody, but I really want to know. I mean, genuinely interested in having that conversation. You have the mic. What would you like to say to them? And what would you like to say to immigrants who are being maybe bombarded with these questions or asked these questions very often and sometimes feel defensive or don't want to engage or maybe want to but just are shying away from it?
The one thing that I would say to those who are curious and asking questions, please be open-minded. Please be you know, I guess, considerate mm-hmm. of that we all, no matter if you are an immigrant or you're domestic, or, no matter
I like that,
that
I never heard
no
of
matter
that,
that
local or born and raised here,
you have, we all have our own stories, where we came from, mm-hmm. what we've been through, and every story is different, obviously. There might be some similarities, but the over-communication is the key here. Because I might say leather or letter, but if we will pass that little barriers and just by saying like, hey, let me explain a little bit deeper and let's just be on the same page, be more acceptive that mm-hmm. somebody, if somebody, let's say, comes to somebody's country, how they say it, there's a reason behind it. There's always a story behind it. Hear it out, because mm-hmm. you might be very shocked or surprised, and you will learn so much. There's so much to learn from all of us, domestic or immigrants. Mm-hmm. So I would say give an opportunity for both sides to speak up and listen out. Be a good listener and be open-minded, because no, I really rarely think that there's situations when people come here just to do something bad. Like,
yeah.
There's rarely a bad motive. Mm-hmm. There's always, people want to make it better for their kids, for their loved ones. Majority of those immigrants that come here, they would be just trying to make it better for their youth, for their, you know, wife, spouse, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. There's always a story behind it. Don't just shut it out and put like, you know, claims on somebody or tags on somebody. Hey, this is, he has a long beard or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially right now, it's like, it was really cool. I had actually a long beard. It was really awesome. It was that stage where like, okay, I need to get more stylish. But just be open-minded, over-communicate things, hear out each other, you know, and there's always things to learn and benefit from each other and help each other grow as a person, as like individual, as a business, whatever it might be.
And you would put that advice out to immigrants themselves as well? Or do you
absolutely.
Have something
absolutely. Don't get share? Too offended if somebody, if, you know, in that case, when that story, when there's like this old fart came out and just started saying some things, I could have said like, hey, what are you trying to say?
Uh-huh.
Or you can always put it, twist it around, put the question on him, like, what did you know about us? Yeah. Like,
poke just, a hole in
yeah,
their
poke
argument.
A hole
in
their, let's, yeah. let's talk it out. Because essentially, that guy, I guess, at the end of that night at the table, he was really cool with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he changed some of his, you know, perspectives on the immigrants themselves. But people afraid, and that, yeah. that fear can be overcome by just over communicating, talking to each other, hearing out, doing more stories like this. If we have more of those kind of shows or podcasts that people actually can hear us out and hear those stories, maybe that's going to be triggering something good.
The Ayan Immigrant is a production of WBOY Studios in Fort Wayne and was created by Ahmed Abdelmajid. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and keep these conversations going. You can find us on Facebook or visit theayanimmigrant.com to see additional content and pictures of this season's guests. Today's interview was produced by me, Katie Anderson, and edited by Ben Klemmer. Thanks for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.